Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we hope you've been enjoying our best of week while Steve's been on vacation. He is here on Monday. Be rested, recharged, and ready to go. Sean Carey here, Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. One of the best ever to don the singlet for Penn State Wrestling in the legendary Rec Hall. David Taylor, the Magic Man, had a chance to speak with the voice of the Nittany Lions, Ironhead Jeff Byers. We'll have that for you in just a moment. And then we'll wrap up our best of week with Steve's conversation with the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, Tony Knopp. We'll talk sports business with Tony at 4:35. Friday edition of the Steve Jones Show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, the beverage supermarket, Reagan Street in Sunbury. Beer specials now through Tuesday. Michelob Ultra 30-pack cans, $22.97, and Moosehead 12-pack cans, $9.95. Stock up on your favorites, whether you love domestics or imports. IPAs, they got them. Got your snacks, chips, pretzels. Go to the pickle bar. Lots and lots of flavors there. And fresh roasted peanuts. They're roasting all the time. Ice right by the door. Grab a dolly. Stock up on what you love this time of year. And Brewers Outlet, the beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast, available on both the Apple Podcast app, iTunes, and Google Play. You can also find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Twitter handle at Steve Jones PSU, and our email is stevejones@wkok.com. Late day news roundup next hour with Sarah Benick. She'll take you till 6:30, then we'll head into Phillies baseball weekend series with the San Diego Padres as the Phillies continue their terrific season, which where a lot of people exceeded all expectations. Now, the lineup is in for tonight. Phillies versus Padres. Hernandez, Hoskins, Herrera, Santana, Franco, Altair, Kingery, Alfaro, and Arrieta. That'll be your starting nine tonight for the Fightins. 6:30 will be on deck and 7:05 first pitch with Scott Fransky, Larry Anderson, and Jim Jackson. And then the Phillies will start a three-game series with the Dodgers next week. So that means Manny Machado heading to, well, no, we thought he'd be heading to Philadelphia, but wrong jersey. But Chase Utley is going to be heading back. I expect multiple standing ovations for him next week. Actually, NBC Sports Philadelphia, last weekend, they premiered a special one-hour feature marking the 10th anniversary of the World Series championship back in 2008, and they have been airing replays of that, so you can check either NBC Sports Philadelphia or NBC Sports Philadelphia Plus for that. I believe the next one airs tonight at 11 on NBC Sports Philadelphia Plus. That's tonight at 11. There could be a few more airings over the weekend on either channel, so be on the lookout for that if you haven't had a chance to see that yet. Great for the Phillies fans. Must watch for Phillies fans. Well, if you're a wrestling fan, this guy, an absolute must watch for sure. Multiple national champion for the Nittany Lions, and now on our America's team, looking for gold, and hopefully the next Olympiad, he will make it onto the team. The Magic Man, David Taylor, prior to the Final X that took place at Rec Hall a little over a month ago, David had a chance to speak with the voice of the Nittany Lions Wrestling Radio Network, Ironhead Jeff Byers.
David Taylor, two-time NCAA champ, Penn State. Jeff Byers, the voice of Penn State Wrestling, and an opportunity to talk with David Taylor this morning.
David Taylor, former Penn State great, and David is, of course, competing in the Final X event for a spot on the U.S. World Team this Saturday evening. The competition gets underway at 6 o'clock. David's match with Nick Renan, best of three series, will cap off the evening's activities. And Mr. Taylor, always good to see you. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jeff. Good morning.
David, let's let's talk a little bit about, we're talking a little bit off air, so might as well talk a little bit about it on air. Just I don't know what your thoughts are. I love the direction that freestyle wrestling is moving with the rules right now, and I think it's, to me, it's making it more relatable to the American wrestling fan, the ones that are familiar with folk style.
Well, first, I'd like to start just say how excited I am to wrestle in Rec Hall and be home in State College for the first time in 4 years. February of 2014 is the last time I got to wrestle here. So, you know, I'm excited about that. I'm excited to be able to wrestle in front of my hometown, my home fan base. You know, and that's one of the things I think that, you know, at this point in my career, I don't wrestle folk style anymore, and I do wrestle freestyle. And I think that a lot of people are excited to watch me and to follow me, but they're not really sure what I'm doing or what freestyle is. And freestyle is the sport that's, or that's the style that's competed in the Olympic Games and the World Championships. I would say that right now the rule changes are the best they've been in a really long time. I think in the old rules was a best 2 out of 3 format where you had to win 2 of the 3 periods. It was a lot more strategy involved, and I think the best wrestler won maybe 50% of the time.
Yeah.
It was a lot of times it was a ball grab, it was strategic, it was one push out, there wasn't a lot of scoring going on, and that did not favor me in my style as I was trying to transition to freestyle. When these new rules came in place, now it's 2 3-minute periods, so a 3-minute period with a 30-second break, 3-minute period, cumulative scoring, a tech fall is 10 points, so at 10 points the match is over, falls remain the same. I'd say the biggest thing with freestyle, and we hear this a lot with folk style right now that they would like it to be implemented, is the push-out rule. So in freestyle, you'll see it this weekend, though, in the circle, there'll be like a 2-foot, this weekend it's a white barrier towards the outside of the out-of-bounds line. That's called the zone.
Yeah.
Basically, once you get pushed out of bounds, you'll receive a point if you're on your feet. If you're grounded, there'll be no point. So that's, I'd say, the biggest difference in folk style versus freestyle is that edge wrestling. You know, in folk style, for a long time, you're rewarded by evading takedowns going out of bounds. They've changed that a little bit with a stalling call, but that's where a lot of the judgment comes in now.
Yeah.
And freestyle, it's a little bit more cut and dry. I mean, if you get pushed out of bounds, you have a point. If you're grounded, if, you know, if we're both in on a shot, we're on our knees, a point typically isn't awarded. So the really, you know, there's 3 referees. You know, 2 of the 3 have to agree on the call. So I'd say that is a big change. And the other one that is different is, you know, in folk style, to get back points, you need a 2-swipe. In freestyle, it's just an exposure past 90. So if you expose your back, you're giving up 2 points. If you get taken down from your feet to your back, you're giving up 4 points. So I think once you have an understanding of the rule scoring in freestyle, it's actually really easy to follow. Folk style, with all the scrambling and the rolling on their legs and the scrambles, they're exciting. But, that's where I think, you know, sometimes it gets frustrating as a fan. Be like, wow, we just watched 2 minutes and guys are rolling across their back and rule change after. In freestyle, you're forced to wrestle without exposing, yeah, without getting pushed out of bounds. So a lot of that 3-minute period takes place with continual wrestling. There's not a lot of stoppages, not a lot of stalemates. So it's as I've done this, you know, I really enjoy wrestling freestyle, and I think it's very fan friendly. You know, I think there's always going to be your, some things happen where maybe, you know, people are going to question the calls and things like that. But for the most part, I think in this, you know, I think it's very enjoyable, and I think the Penn State crowd who aren't educated in freestyle are going to really enjoy it this weekend. Plus, you get to watch some really great wrestling.
Yeah, some really great wrestling. Again, Joey McKenna and Logan Stieber, Kyle Dake versus Zahid Valencia, and then David Taylor and Nick Radin on the men's side. We have Kayla Miracle against Mallory Velty, Aaron Clodgo and Rachel Waters, and then Adeline Gray and Karene Bullock taking on each other in women's action. So 6 spots in all on the U.S. World Team will be decided on Saturday night at Rec Hall. When you get to the stage that you are, where you're on the world team, how much of your training is done here in State College? How much is done out at the Olympic Training Center? And how much is done at other places where you're seeking out other training opportunities with different folks that you might not otherwise get to train with here or out at Colorado Springs even?
Well, I'd say I might be one of the luckiest guys in the world, definitely in the United States with, you know, my training at Penn State is second to none, you know, with the coaching staff that we have. So, I mean, Casey Cunningham has kind of been my coach that I've wrestled with since I was in college, and that hasn't changed. You know, being bigger now, I get to wrestle with Kale a lot more, having Jake Varner available. So just our coaching staff alone. And then you throw in, you know, I'm right in the gauntlet of our, you know, our five national champions, plus all the other guys that we have on our team, the young kids coming up. You know, so it's just, I have an amazing group of partners here. So, you know, I would say that I do a lot of training here. We have national team commitments. Basically, once the world team is established, so after this weekend, we have a, that's when our commitments pick up for, you know, like national team things where we have to travel to Colorado Springs, or this year we may have a satellite camp in Southern California.
Okay.
And those are things that are kind of required based on the national team. But I would say that the majority of my training takes place here. The thing that's different, again, about freestyle is I compete more frequently probably than most guys do. I made that adjustment in the last 2 years. I looked around and I said, you know, what are these guys doing that are winning world championships? You know, how many matches are they wrestling? And I thought that most of the guys wrestle 25 to 30 matches a year, which kind of brought me back to my collegiate, where I thought I've wrestled my best in my career is when I was getting those 30 matches a season to prepare for the NCAAs. Now I can take that 25 to 30 matches and I can spread it out usually every 6 to 8 weeks. So I compete. I have like a week to kind of recover, and I have that 5 to 6 to 7 weeks of training and building before I compete again. So that's the biggest probably change in my schedule than it was before. I really try to mold my schedule where I try and stay here as much as I possibly can and not get distracted leaving town, because I feel like this is where I get my best training and my best preparation. And since doing that, I've had my best results.
How much of a challenge is it for you to, I guess, manage that time? And I realize you had your hands full managing your time in college as well, but you are somebody that I think very much in the mold of Cal is looking to grow the sport, and that is about more than just you and your development, and we see that with what you're doing with the kids' programs. But how difficult, I guess, do you find it to make sure, okay, yes, I am doing what I need to do to get where I need to be, while also trying to help the wrestling community, and in particular the kids?
Well, I'd say it's definitely a challenge. I think between my path to being a World Olympic champion, is really a lot of it has to do with myself and not drawing myself too thin. I can easily get, I wouldn't say distracted, but I have a lot of pokers in the fire at all times.
Yeah.
I want to be able to do as much as I possibly can at this point in my career, why I'm still competing, you know, and we're also trying to build, what we want to do the rest of our life. So I think there's a fine line of, man, a lot of people said, you need to sacrifice everything you need to do to be the best in the world. And I believe that. But I believe that there's a lot of time during the day that can be used doing other things at the same time. So it's utilizing that time appropriate. You know, there's times when I actually had to make an adjustment 6 weeks ago. So for the last, my first competition in December. Since December, my wife and I, have started and opened a cold pressed juice company in town, K2 Roots. We just opened our new store like 2 weeks ago. Myself and Mark McKnight and Eric Thompson, we have a wrestling club called M2 Training Center. We started in Julian, Pennsylvania in October, and we just moved to a new facility in Pleasant Gap, Pennsylvania. So both of those are growing quickly. And our training center, we have the opportunity to really, we're seeing a big improvement in the kids that we've been working with. The kids that have been coming since October, Mark and Eric do an awesome job, you know, knowing that my biggest barrier to that is, I really wanted to be able to impact kids and share my knowledge with them. But I knew that I'm going to be traveling a lot.
Yeah.
So I knew right away, Mark and Eric were essential to that, and they do a great job, amazing job. And these kids are continuing to get better. In the last couple of months, our kids that had been beaten a couple months ago are starting to beat 4 or 5 or 6 kids that they were losing to. So it's really exciting to see their progress, and that's really exciting. And I want to be there as much as I possibly can, you know, and I have to balance, obviously, my training commitments and my recovery with that of – so we are always communicating and trying to continue to have a consistent curriculum that we're help feeding those kids. So, kind of get back to your question to kind of fill in. It's just that time commitment is, to me, I want to be the best in the world. That's no question. But I also want to be able to use my time to be able to do as much as I can at this point in my career and help people. You know, I have a big following. I have a big reach. I have a lot of knowledge that I've been able to gather from being around a lot of great coaches and partners and people over time, and I'd like to be able to spread that to people at the same time. So,
talk about the role of analytics and how that plays into your training. The rest and recovery, the strength training, the diet, the sleep. I mean, it all, again, factors into trying to perform at your optimum.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, especially for me, for most of my career, I just was stubborn in the belief that if I just wrestle all the time, I don't really need to lift weights. You know, I didn't really have a great diet. I had a horrible diet for most of my collegiate career. But at this level, at the professional level, we're talking about the slimmest of margin. You know, in the Olympic Games, right, every 4 years, only six guys from the United States make the Olympic team. So one per weight class every 4 years. So that's such a small margin. So it's like, you know, why not put all your resources into trying to be at your best you possibly can be? So when I decided to, probably the best decision I made in my career is going from 74 kilos to 86 kilos. And that was, you know, it was a scary jump. You know, that was a, you know, from 163 pounds to 189. So that's a 26-pound weight class jump. But since making that, the best I perform, the best I feel. I walk around right around 200 pounds. When I made that jump, I talked to Coach Casey, and I was like, hey, you know, I really need to dedicate some time to the weight room. I've really never lifted before, and that's going to be essential. So Coach Casey worked with Sam Calvita in California, who works at the training lab, when he competed. And since developing that relationship with Coach Cal in California, I work remote with him, and he monitors really everything. And talk about analytics, he has algorithms that are built into every aspect of what I do. So it's very, very finely detailed, from my sleep and recovery, my heart rate variability, my strength and conditioning, I mean, my nutrition, everything that goes in and out of my body is monitored with Sam. And, you know, why, you really question, you know, why not put that in? If that makes the smallest of difference of, you know, feeling better in the last 30 seconds or having a more explosive burst in the first 30 seconds, it's well worth it. So, I put a lot of time and effort into that, and it's pretty detailed. You know, I would be way too much to be able to explain right now, but it keeps me on task, and it keeps me excited to go in there and continue trying to build all the time.
Nick Renan, how much do you know about him? I don't know that there are a lot of folks, I think, that were surprised that he's in the finals here against you. Obviously a Pennsylvania kid and at North Carolina State. But how much do you know about his game, and what are some keys from your standpoint going into the matchup here on Saturday night?
I mean, he's young and he's hungry. You know, he has had a good season this year. You know, he had started off a little bit of struggles, and he really came on towards the end of the year at the U.S. Open, the World Team Trials. Richard Perry is a very tough competitor, so to beat him two matches in a row, I mean, he's definitely battle-tested and excited to be there. So I think whenever you wrestle an opponent at this level, you know, they're ready to wrestle. There's no reason to overlook anybody. But at the same time, you know, I'm ready to step on the mat, and I feel really prepared, and I'm excited to wrestle. No matter who it is, I feel I can control what I want to do, and I'm going to wrestle really high pace. I'm going to take a lot of shots, and I'm going to try and put a lot of points on the scoreboard. And I feel prepared to be a world champion, and this is just a step. You know, be able to go out and wrestle as hard as I possibly can this weekend, and continue to move on to the next goal.
From a team perspective, how impressed are you with what the United States has right now? This is arguably the best freestyle team last year and now heading into this year that the U.S. maybe top to bottom has ever had.
Well, I think, you know, just again, just kind of a little background, you know, six weight classes for the Olympic Games in 2016. We went to eight weight classes shortly after that. So we were to spread, you know, from six weight, all those guys spread almost every 20, 25 pounds. They added two weight classes, so some guys were able to spread out. And then this year was the first year they actually added 10 weight classes. So what was in six is now spread out to 10. So I think that, you know, the depth in the weight classes has decreased a little bit, but the guys that are making the team right now are, we can compete for world championships right now at pretty much every weight class. So, you know, to be able to compete with, you know, the European countries, you know, that's definitely what we need. You know, last year was, you know, we won the world championship as a team last year, which is exciting. And I feel that this year our team is very strong. You know, we were also great at the World Cup with 10 weight classes. So it's just, I mean, every country is going to be prepared. Every country is going to put together their best lineup. But I believe, you know, I really believe in our country, and I'm just excited to have the opportunity to represent it.
David, really appreciate your taking the time this morning. We'll definitely follow up with you after the event and wish you the best of luck moving forward.
Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff Byers with David Taylor, one of the greats in the history of Penn State wrestling. We'll come back with more in a moment, brought to you by Brewers Outlet on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
By the way, David Taylor defeated North Carolina State star Nick Renan at Final X in two straight matches at 86 kilos to win a spot on the U.S. World Team. David dominated, winning by technical falls in both matches, 13-2 and 10-0. David will be competing for Team USA at the World Championships in Budapest, Hungary, October 20th to the 28th. Best of luck to the Magic Man. We'll wrap up our best of week with our conversation with Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management and InviteManager.com, as the Steve Jones Show continues. Friday edition brought to you by Brewers Outlet, News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. It's been a great best of week. You know, Steve has been enjoying great time with his family this week, and he'll be back on the show Monday. What I can tell you next week, we got a couple of guests already lined up for Tuesday's show, and both will be making their first appearances on the show. Jared Paolo is a Philadelphia Phillies writer for SB Nation. He's going to join us on Tuesday, and also looking forward to speaking with NFL insider Adam Kaplan from Sirius XM NFL Radio. NFL training camps open up next week, so looking forward to getting some pro football talk rolling with Adam Kaplan next week on Tuesday. And don't forget to subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast on Apple Podcast, iTunes, Google Play, and also we're available at stevejonesshow.com. About a month or so ago, Steve had a chance to get some sports business news rolling and kicking around topics with the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, our great friend Tony Knopp.
Things are great. Great to talk to you guys again.
Great to talk with you. Let's start with World Cup 2026. Is there a different attitude about World Cup 2026 as opposed to Summer Olympics 2028?
Somewhat. The reality, people are pretty optimistic about the Olympics in 2028 just because, you know, Los Angeles has a good history of hosting events that don't break the bank. You know, 1984, when they hosted the Olympics, they were the first ones to turn a profit on it in decades. You know, the World Cup, I think, you know, companies are optimistic about it. I'll be really curious to see how infrastructure works between the three different countries and who gets to play where, because, you know, obviously travel is a big aspect of, you know, where a World Cup is hosted. But we all knew it was a matter of time before FIFA had to come back somewhere where they were going to make some money, right? They, you know, Qatar, nobody's going to Qatar in 2022. Russia is claiming that they've sold out their tickets, but it's not looking like it's the most robust World Cup we've ever seen. So like this is the world stage coming back to a country where all of the infrastructure exists already, and you know, will be getting built upon anyways for the Olympics coming in 2028. So I'm not surprised by it even a little bit. I'm just surprised it took this long.
Exactly. One thing with the World Cup, though, except for some venues, and it's not many, where you have to then put trays of grass on top of field turf, the facilities are already in place as opposed to having to build facilities. So you have to feel more comfortable about a bid like that. And also, let's face it, you got 48, what, there'll be 45 other countries bringing fans with them into North America. Are these the selling points on it?
I think so. And, you know, look, this is obviously becoming more of a commercial enterprise as every one of them goes by. Not that it hasn't been a commercial enterprise, but they're expanding the field. They awarded the World Cup to three countries, two of which are not qualifiers regularly. I'd like to say the U.S. is a regular qualifier, but they're not playing next month or this month and next. So for them to say, yeah, we're going to award this to the North American contingent and we're going to let all three of them in, it's just starting to show that this is becoming more of a maybe they're a little less worried about the honor and exclusivity of the World Cup, and they're a little more worried about the commercial success of it.
Okay. So what? Give me the initial read from your, because the corporate partners buy months and years out.
Yeah.
So how enthusiastic were they about 2028 Los Angeles? And have you had at least an initial read on 2026 World Cup?
2026 World Cup will be very strong, but what's really important here is it's going to absolutely destroy Qatar in 2022. My belief is, and this is conspiracy theory only, they did this for two reasons. One, they need to get back to North America to make some money. Two, Qatar might not be ready, and we might not be playing the World Cup there in 2022. And it's very easy at that point to push the World Cup from Qatar back to North America, which they did with the Women's World Cup in the past already anyways. So I think there's a little bit of hedging a bet right now, because everything we're hearing out of Qatar is bad. And now you're going to go to world sponsors and say, you should sponsor the World Cup in Qatar 2022. Bring everybody out, bring all your corporate partners. But oh, by the way, the North American World Cup's the next one. I mean, almost any corporate sponsor is going to look at that and say, unless we're really trying to drive business in the Middle East, which some businesses are, we don't have any interest in this. We're gonna wait and save our powder for World Cup 2026.
It sounds like it's the same theory we heard about Tokyo 2020 with the Olympics. They'd rather say, hey, let's send it there in terms of saving their money and moving it to that. Is that a fair analogy?
Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. I mean, Pyeongchang was a cool Olympics that didn't do so well commercially. Tokyo is going to be a sensation as a Summer Olympic Games. Same thing with Paris, I assume, even though I think they're already a bajillion dollars over their budget, so that's going to be a good joke for us for the next 6 years. But, you know, they're starting to realize that. And, you know, there was a referendum that passed that Switzerland and there's another country that escapes me now that would not approve a bid on the Winter Olympic Games. So I think we're seeing what you and I have been talking about for the last 2 years. You know, local governments are no longer interested in hosting these events if they're not going to be profitable. And so these events, which were kind of, you know, sticking their nose up to North America and the North American money saying, hey, we can grow the game elsewhere, are starting to realize, well, maybe we can't. Maybe our bread gets buttered here.
My understanding is that the United States will get 60 of the 80 matches. 10 will be in Canada, 10 will be in Mexico. What's it going to take for a city to end up hosting some World Cup events, and how important is it to certain corporate partners as to which cities get it?
So when these guys look at what they're sponsoring, so I remember the World Cup, it was your last time, and what it does to the local economy. It's a massive boon to the local economy, especially with tourism. And we were lucky enough where I was that we had Brazil in our section in Northern California. So we got to go see them at Stanford Stadium, and it really, you know, it was the inception of the MLS, which has since grown. It all started with that World Cup game. are with those World Cup games. You know, when you're a corporate sponsor, it's really interesting. They don't look at it the way we generally would as, you know, fantasy football owners. You know, they don't look at it and say, hey, this is the best one, we need to invest here. And they do that sometimes, but really what they're looking at is, okay, I am a major credit card company, or I'm a major consumer packaged goods brand, and I'm trying to expand my business into the Northeast. I don't really care who's playing there. I hope we get good teams, but I'm trying to get expansion into the Northeast. And that's generally how they approach this stuff. They say, look, I've got a sponsorship budget. I need to use it in these different regions or in these different countries, and that's where I'm going to apply my powder, because that's going to help us grow and get people to sign up for more credit cards, buy more toilet paper, you know, pick up more cereal, that sort of thing. It's a lot more scientific than people think, and a lot less reliant on who the team is as much as it's as reliant on where it is. That's the sponsor side. Now, the hospitality side, the people who are taking customers to the games, they want to go where Brazil's playing. They want to go where Italy's playing. They want to go where France is playing, right? That's totally different.
And yet there are certain hotbeds in this country. Kansas City is one. Obviously, there, you know, Dallas is another. But the Pacific Northwest, between Vancouver, Canadian side of the bid, and Seattle. Now, Portland doesn't have a facility to host this.
No,
but that area is hot when it comes to the sport of soccer. I would assume from a Pacific Northwest, and also from an investment point of view, a lot of people love the Pacific Northwest.
You know, they love the Pacific Northwest from the investment point of view. They love it because there's been a boon there as far as Fortune 500 scale. You know, when people look at consolidation of Fortune 500 businesses, they generally think, you know, New York, and there's got to be some oil money in Texas, and we know all the tech companies in California, but they always overlook the Washington area, the Pacific Northwest, where you have, you know, Nike and Starbucks and Microsoft and Amazon. And as you start to rattle that list off, you know, the Boeings, Raytheons, all of those, people start to realize, wow, that's a lot more influence than I anticipated, on top of the fact that their soccer culture up there is second to maybe nobody in North America. You know, you have some people in Kansas City and otherwise who will argue with that, but they sell everything out up there. Whenever the national team plays, it's sold out. They sell out all their MLS games. They've got a wonderful rivalry going. They, you know, they've got the giant CenturyLink field there that they play at. It'll be interesting. Who gets it, Vancouver or Seattle or both? I honestly could see it being both.
I think it's both. I think in Canada it's going to be Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver.
Yeah, that makes sense. Maybe Calgary. Maybe Calgary, but I don't know. It's not the easiest to get to.
Not the easiest to get to, and the stadium is, I don't think, is big enough.
No, yeah, where the Stampeders play.
Yeah. Yeah, McMahon Stadium, I want to say it's called.
I know the Saddle Dome is a hockey team plays. I don't remember what they call the Stampeders.
Yeah, I think McMahon Stadium is what it's called. I'm not sure it's big enough. BC Place is. Toronto obviously has Rogers Center. Montreal still has the Big O. Might as well use it for something.
What a great stadium that was. You and I remember that. I'm sure a lot of listeners don't remember watching games there anymore. It's been so long.
Hey, you know, we also remember Yuppie, the mascot.
Yeah. Oh, man. The saddest part of that whole thing was that team in 1994 had Pedro Martinez and basically everybody else on it, and I think was in first place by 10 or 12 games.
And they had the best record in baseball.
Baseball. And then there was a lockout, and it decimated the franchise completely. They were on their way to a World Series, and just now they don't even have a team. They got decimated by that.
And if baseball ever expands, they'll seriously be considered for it, because baseball feels guilt.
They tried to make it work, but then Loria wanted them out of there, and then the Nats showed up, and then, you know, Miami, which is a whole different story, fleeced the local government there and took a bunch of money. I mean, if anybody wants to read about how to take advantage of public servants, read about what they did down in Miami. They basically paid for that stadium, and then nobody showed up, and they flipped it, and, man, they really took Miami for a ride.
Okay, what does the decision of one player mean for corporate money as to where it's distributed, and that one player is LeBron James?
Yeah, so in football, it means a lot more than most other sports. You know, people like to think that LeBron's the first time this has ever happened, but not so true. I mean, Wayne Gretzky did that when he moved from Edmonton down to Los Angeles, and it was a tectonic shift. So, you know, wherever LeBron ends up, it is a tectonic shift to that business. You can make every argument under the sun that, you know, he's the reason there shouldn't be a salary tax or, you know, a salary cap or a luxury tax. But as far as the sponsors go, they're going to follow. They're going to follow if it's in a situation where it helps them grow globally. Because the difference between LeBron James and, say, me being a sponsor and wanting to sponsor the World Cup in the Northeast, LeBron James has international appeal now. So if I'm trying to grow internationally, I link my name to him. You know, Kobe Bryant, the vast majority of Kobe's sponsorship dollars over the last few years of his career came out of China, where he sells three times as many jerseys than anybody else. And that's what they're really looking at with LeBron James. It's, you know, where's his market going to be? How is that market going to affect sponsorship? As far as hospitality goes, it's going to, I mean, just absolutely blow it out for a team. So any team that's going to land him is going to see such a significant lift in ticket sales through, you know, secondary means, right? People think that it's just going to be, oh, well, the tickets are sold out. Teams aren't that foolish anymore. If I'm the Lakers and I sign LeBron, or if I'm the Sixers and I sign LeBron, now all of a sudden I can get you some tickets, but you've got to sign up as a sponsor, or you've got to buy some of the other events that we have that come through the building that maybe don't do so well. So that's the kind of impact he has. People think just because LeBron shows up at the 76ers, now the 76ers are sold out and killing it. Well, it goes beyond that. The 76ers are sold out and killing it, and all of their other properties are getting to leverage his drawing power as well.
Right. On expansion, if the NFL goes into London, or let's take the NBA, and the NBA goes into London, Madrid, Paris, Berlin, as examples.
It will. Yeah.
What corporately would that mean? How interested would corporations be in investing in now a league that is now invested itself in Europe?
It depends on who. It depends on what sponsors we're talking about. A lot of the traditional sponsors that people would think would follow them over there, the big names that you guys would recognize, they're generally not that focused in Europe anymore. A lot of the sponsorship dollars we see are going into growing economies, whether that's in South America, China, the Asia-Pacific region.
Asia.
And that's why, exactly, that's why you see MasterCard doing a big deal with, you know, the Rugby World Cup. That's why you see, you know, CDW getting involved internationally. It's why you see these companies doing that. It's all really just about their markets. So the traditional sponsors for the NBA here, outside of like the apparel guys who want to sell anywhere they can, probably wouldn't be as interested in Europe as many would think. But then there's a number of European sponsors and European banks, Santander, people like that, who would clamor for the rights to get there. I mean, I'm very long basketball as a sport right now. The fact is everything's going their way. They got international participation. They really nailed it before everybody else. You know, the expansion to Toronto was a hit. It opened up Canada. You know, Vancouver didn't go so well. They probably should have planted somebody there like they did Carter in Toronto. But they're in a situation now where they've got this international league. There's no concerns about head injuries. There's no concerns about, you know, it being dominated by a specific, you know, country like the Dominican, the baseball. They're going to go to Europe. It's a very short period of time. They're going to be over there. The only problem you have in Europe is they have very different laws in Europe. So with basketball games in Turkey, for example, there's no drinking. And then when they do have drinking, they actually have giant bulletproof glass in between the fans and the court. So they'll have to work that out.
Terrific. But they also the NBA also got fortunate. Dirk Nowitzki came over from Germany, ended up being a big time player. Manu Ginobili comes in from Argentina, he's a big time player. Mm-hmm. Yao Ming comes over from China and ends up being a big time player. I mean, personnel helped open up avenues for them.
Yao Ming made more money for Kobe Bryant than he did for himself by coming over here. And you know that's really where they have to be careful about how they expand. Because if you look at where they've had success with expansion franchises and where they've struggled, they need to try to find a way to model what the Golden Knights did and make sure that an expansion franchise gets a name that people will pay attention to, either the team's winning or not. Because if you look at the market demographics of Toronto versus Vancouver when they opened both of those teams, people forget about the Vancouver Grizzlies. It really wasn't that much different. The problem was the Grizzlies whiffed on their first four draft picks. You know, the Raptors got Vince Carter and Tracy McGrady and were a 50-win team by season three. I think
so. You're not. You weren't big on Big Country.
I wasn't big on Big Country. I remember Big Country. Oh man,
Bryant Reeves
was with the team. To Memphis,
well, the guy that was the coach of the Vancouver Grizzlies, a good friend, was an old friend of mine, Brian Hill.
Oh yeah, yeah. They had who's the other kid? They got a kid out of Cal that was supposed to be a scorer and never turned into anything.
Yeah,
he was in the league for about 20 years, but he just never got anything done. Sharif Abdur-Rahim or something. I forget what his name was.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yes, that is.
Yeah,
yep.
Sharif Abdur-Rahim. But that's the point. So what's totally changed the market, and fans don't realize this yet, is what the Vegas Golden Knights did this year and how successful that was, not just for them, but for everybody else who got to share in the fees in the expansion pool. Now Seattle's trying to do the same thing with the NHL and say, look, we want the same draft rules. Obviously, other teams are saying this is a problem. You know, you put somebody in the Stanley Cup Finals year one. But that's the new model for expansion. You know, what we know in our generation is put a team there, everybody's excited for 3 to 5 years, the team sucks for a while, right? Unless they land Shaq. But now they're going to start saying, hey, look, we, you know, as this expands the pool for the league, we need to start putting people in places that, you know, drive more interest. And the NBA really does have to get more international, because the rumor right now is the Denver Broncos going on sale would make the Carolina Panthers sale look like chump change. Like there are people throwing around $3.5-4 billion for the Denver Broncos right now.
Yeah, because the Boland family does have to sell it. What Carolina got now, David Tepper wasn't even the highest bidder. And he also, to his credit, Tony, paid cash.
Yeah. Hey, cash up front when you're one of the leagues. To the listeners who haven't heard about what happened with the Islanders. It's a good story to go look up online when they accepted a bidder who literally had no money at all and ran the New York Islanders for 2 years. So I think we're going to see continued awarding of franchises to people like that. There's a lot of rumors out there now that private equity is getting involved in buying teams because they're good investments. I don't ever see that happening again because of how bad an experience it was with Fox and the Dodgers. Right, there's just too much turnover. It's not within a family. I think they look at the ownership groups in, you know, the Allen family up in Seattle. They like the ownership group in Boston where you have Grousbeck running it with a bunch of rich guys.
Yep.
You know, Golden State's run by one rich guy, but it's really 20 guys that are rich that are invested in it. I think that's the future for this.
Yeah, I think guys like John Henry, David Tepper, Jerry Jones, leagues love those guys. Mark Cuban,
yeah, Jim Pilata,
that's the owner.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Final question, as we always get to. So, next 18 months, you're talking with people. What is hot? What is not?
You know, it's really interesting right now. This market is out of control as far as what the spending that we're seeing. Consumer confidence is pretty high, and that translates into our market pretty rapidly. So people are opening up their checkbooks and really getting after it these days. The U.S. Open this weekend will be a big win for the PGA. And people don't realize that the U.S. Open is not a PGA Tour event. It's a PGA. It's a USGA event. So
the USGA
be a really big
event, and they're in the right spot, in the right moment, right golf course, everything.
Everything. And if Tiger can get in contention, that's going to be an absolute monster. Football, obviously, is what everybody's focused on right now. And what people are really interested in is, you know, just like we were talking at the beginning of the segment about how FIFA has kind of realized and the IOC is starting to realize, I got to go to where my bread's buttered. The NFL has realized that too. And so people are getting more excited about the Super Bowl because the next five Super Bowls are not in cold weather cities.
That's right.
They're in traditional, these are cities people travel to. They have the infrastructure to host them. You know, we're going back to New Orleans and Florida and Los Angeles, and so that's what people are talking about a lot.
See, and that's the key right there. The key is it's okay to experiment with a Las Vegas as a franchise, but it's now 2018, Tony, and my thought is we now have the sample size of a lifetime to know what actually works and what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. We do.
That's how I look at it. I mean, I look at it as it's okay once in a while to see if something else works, but we now know what works and what doesn't work for the consumer, correct?
Exactly. And what's fascinating, so I spent some time with the Warriors a couple weeks ago. I was at the Raiders site and center last week. Also saw the UFC.
And by the way, those are two franchises that are going to new places. People don't realize the Warriors are going back to San Francisco next year.
Back to San Francisco. The Warriors sold it out twice as fast as they thought they were going to. They just got to figure out how to transition themselves into being a service business, because they sold out the Chase Center faster than they thought. And the Raiders had 94 suites, and I think the goal was to have like 30 of them sold by now and then start to focus nationally. And I don't remember exactly, but I think they told me something like 60 or 70 of them are sold. And wow. Steve, they're sold on 15-year deals,
oh,
which is absurd. In Los Angeles, they're getting 20-year deals right now, which is absurd. I mean, hockey teams and basketball teams right now are still getting 1, 3, and 5-year deals. So it's, you know, there's some hot markets. And what these teams have to figure out is, do we have everybody expire at the same time? Because that's what some of the teams are doing. Is it's, all right, everybody's signing a 15-year deal. Well, in 15 years, you're going to be sweating because all of your luxury suites are up for renewal in the same year. And you need to start extending people in advance. We're going to start winning.
Start winning. Hey,
start winning.
You're a winner us always. I just love having you on the show. I hope everything is going well for you business-wise. I hope your family's doing great, and I can't wait to talk to you again.